Hi, I'm Rick Anthony, and welcome to the Someone You Should Know podcast, the podcast that focuses on musicians, authors, and interesting people. We like to say we're making a difference one artist at a time. So sit back, have a cold one, and get ready to meet someone you should know. Author time once again on the podcast. Today we have an award-winning author who's a retired therapist. She has co-authored several notable books. Her latest book is called Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path, The Dance of Darkness and Light in Our Search for Awakening. It's available now. We're going to talk about it with Connie Zweig. Connie, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Connie, I got to ask you, how did you get on this path? Was there at some point in your childhood or as an adolescent or somewhere as you're going to college and such? Where did this come to get to this particular path?
Teaching and writing about the shadow. Shadow is Jung's name for the personal unconscious. And what got me interested in that was I joined a spiritual community at age 19 and spent my 20s there, really focused on practicing meditation and spiritual advancement. And I had some very difficult, challenging experiences there, which led me to leave the community and enter Jungian analysis. And that form of therapy then in my 30s connected me to my own unconscious, what was going on in my dreams, what was going on beneath my awareness that I wasn't conscious of, that was sabotaging my conscious intentions. Mm-hmm. And began to realize that there was this whole universe of the unconscious that very few people were looking at, even since Freud and Jung had, you know, explored this territory years before and formed the whole field of psychology and psychoanalysis. So eventually, after a number of careers in journalism and publishing, I went back to grad school, doctorate in depth psychology, which is the part of psychology that focuses on the unconscious. Mm-hmm. And ended up seeing clients for about 30 years. So the first book on the topic was called Meeting the Shadow. And it was a collection of experts writing about how we meet this part of ourselves that erupts in all kinds of ways. It erupts in self-sabotaging behaviors like the critic or the addict. It erupts in depression and anxiety. There's this unconscious material that shows up in our lives in all kinds of ways. And so Meeting the Shadow struck a chord, and I realized that people were looking for this kind of in-depth exploration of psychology. So I wrote Romancing the Shadow, which is about a method that I developed with a colleague about how to work with this unconscious material. How to romance it, meaning make a conscious relationship with it. And then later, as I was contemplating leaving, retiring from clinical work, I began to ask again, who am I? Mm-hmm. Who am I if I'm not the therapist, the shadow expert, Dr. Connie? And went looking for books about aging and the shadow, and there were none, not a single one. So I said to my husband, oh, my God, I've got to write another book.
And he's going, oh, no, we're going to write another book.
Yeah. Awesome. So lots of research and interviews. There are interviews with spiritual teachers in the book about their practices. Lots of interviews with people who felt the way I did on the threshold of retirement. And lots of discoveries about how the shadow is influencing our transition after midlife. Any time after midlife could be 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and what the purpose of this stage of life is really about, especially according to all the spiritual traditions.
So this is ideal because this is the exact time of my life. I've just recently retired. I'm in my early 60s. So this is definitely something that is ideal for individuals like myself. So go on, please.
Yeah, well, there are tens of millions of us, Rick. Mm-hmm. Who are, you know, in this transition, and because there's no rite of passage for us in the culture, as there is in indigenous cultures. In mainstream culture, there's no guidance. You can get thousands of books about aging, but they're all about demographics and healthcare.
Right,
And
exactly, yeah.
What I call aging from the outside in. So aging from the inside out, you know, what are we feeling? What are we fantasizing? What are we fearing? There's very little material on that. And the book does really well. It's reached a lot of people. So the publisher asked me to go back and revise and rewrite an earlier book that I had written about spirituality and shadow. As you mentioned, meeting the shadow on the spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a brand new version of that book, post Me Too, how we are drawn to charismatic teachers, why they so often act out their shadows, what part of our own shadow gets engaged in spiritual communities like I did,
mm-hmm.
why do we stay there, why do we tolerate abusive behavior, and so on. And so that book is now finding its way out into the world, and it's each one has been an extension of shadow work into a new arena.
Well, very good. Now, let's back up to the previous book. You wound up winning a 2002 Gold COVR Award. You wound up winning the 2022 Gold Nautilus Award, the 2021 American Book Fest Award, the 2021 Best Indie Book Award for Best Inspirational Nonfiction. Are you blown away by the success of this book?
Yeah. So in terms of these awards, what I appreciate about them is that it's reading the readers. It's reaching people and they're acknowledging it. But as I practice from do to who I am, spiritual nature, it doesn't mean as much to me. I'm not really writing from my ego mind. You know, when I wrote Romancing the Shadow in my 40s,
yeah,
if that book had gotten all these awards, it would have meant more to me.
Yeah.
As an elder, what I'm really focused on is the you know, the reality that this is meaningful to my readers and helpful to my readers. So that's what the shift from role to soul is about. It's not so much about success or image or the stuff that we all used to care about, you know, because I'm about to turn 75. And I want to contribute what's most important and most meaningful to me. And that's what matters more than the awards.
I had an epiphany moment very similar to that years ago when my ego was getting way too out of hand. It was one of those things where I would be listening so intently to my shows and such, and it's like I was never happy. And I finally had one of those moments. I said, how can I be happy? And it was like I heard a resounding voice that said, stop helping yourself and start helping others. And that's basically how I've celebrated the last 15, 20 years of my career, and especially even now going into this, it's all about caring for others. And I think that was kind of one of those things that I just had, one of those moments where my shift came on to helping others, just exactly what you're doing, Connie. I love the idea of what you're doing. Before we continue, I hope you're enjoying the Someone You Should Know podcast. You can find us on the World Wide Web at SomeoneYouShouldKnowPodcast.com. There you're going to find our recent news, our archive of past episodes, and a whole lot more. And if you're enjoying the podcast, we invite you to leave us a review. All right? Now, according to Buzzsprout, the service that shares this to all the streaming platforms, we're very, very blessed to reach over 2,100 cities in 85 countries around the world. A couple of new ones we like to add: Cape May, Maryland; Bangor, Maine; also Woodland Park, Colorado; and Kyoto, Japan. The Someone You Should Know podcast, or wherever quality streaming audio is available. And now back to our interview with Connie Zweig. Connie, when was it you actually started your meditation process?
I've been meditating for more than 50 years. The bridge between psychology and spirituality was always there for me. They're very interconnected. And so when I would teach my clients to work with the shadow and do shadow work, I would always teach them meditation to center themselves first, because when you meet some material from the unconscious, it can be disturbing, scary, overwhelming. But if you have a centering practice, whether you meditate with your breath or with a mantra or you do prayer, whatever the centering practice is, or Tai Chi, more body-centered, from there, you can move out and recognize with less fear and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always a part of my clinical work. And so it's an integral part of shadow work.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. And as the field of psychology has become more and more materialistic, with all the neuroscience now, and brief therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, it's really split off from spirit or psyche and from the unconscious. So, you know, there's only one grad school really left now teaching that includes all of this. So it's tragic to me what's happened to the field. But for me, they were never really separate.
Mm-hmm. The brand new book is called Meeting the Shadow on the Spiritual Path, The Dance of Darkness and Light in Our Search for Awakening. Who is this book targeted for, Connie?
Yeah, it's for people who are spiritually disillusioned, may have had an experience of religious trauma, whether it's in the church or the synagogue or with a guru or a shaman or a rabbi or a lama.
Mm-hmm.
It's all denominations. It's an ecumenical exploration. And it's about how to recover from religious trauma or spiritual abuse, how to regain our inspiration and motivation to do spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be for new seekers who want to be aware of the shadow as they start yoga practice. So it's for people who are all those groups. And in psychology, religious is a very big field now, because mm-hmm. this is happening so frequently.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's always in the news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The general trauma work and PTSD work mm-hmm. that therapists know about. So this is specifically geared toward the religious and spiritual domain.
Now, when you were a therapist and you were seeing clients on a regular basis and you were hearing these stories and stuff like, you know, as far as, hey, listen, I think I might have been touched inappropriately by a person of the clergy. They through a lot of struggle as far as they're struggling with it, but they're afraid to speak out about it. How did you handle situations like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of fear about speaking up to a religious or spiritual authority. So we can imagine why that is. And then we can also look at the unconscious process, which is what the book is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we might be born into a community, or we might enter a community as an adult. And if we enter as an adult, we might bring with us a lot of childhood needs that were unmet. The need to be seen,
mm-hmm.
the need to belong, the need to feel special. Many women who were seduced by their teachers told me that the teacher told them they were special and they were the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So if the abuse and the community is meeting unmet needs that we're not conscious of, that are in the shadow, that's going to kind of hold us in place. It's going to paralyze us from speaking up and trying to change the situation. If we have a projection onto the teacher or clergy person, which is we unconsciously attribute to that person the perfect father that we didn't have or the ideal mother that we didn't have,
mm-hmm.
then it's very hard to rock the boat, because we don't want to lose that sacred relationship to that person, even if we see her raging at people, or in so, like I've heard, kicking people. Mm-hmm. Or shaming people, or molesting people.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all these kind of needs that we're unaware of that lead us to these relationships, which can be beautiful and which can bring us transcendent experiences and spiritual breakthroughs, but which also can go awry and turn dark. If the teacher, in some cases, or the leader or the clergy person acts out, becoming a lover in that situation takes a lot of strength and overcoming the attachment that you have. So for me, and it took me several years to get to the point where I was able to say, okay, it's time. I'm going to lose my sense of belonging because I lost all my friends when I left. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lose my purpose and my meaning. I'm going to lose my relationship with this person who's such a genius, and I'm going to be alone and on my own and kind of lost. And I got to the point where I said, okay, I'm ready to do that. And I left. Mm-hmm. So this is a different process for different people, depending, you know, in psychology, we talk about separation and individuation from a family, leaving a family to become a separate individual and an independent person. Is repeated when you leave a spiritual community. And it's very difficult for some people.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to be alone.
Yeah. They don't want to be ostracized by the people that they thought were their friends and such. Yeah,
they don't want to be shunned mm-hmm. and ostracized and criticized. You know, in real cults, like say Scientology, they persecute people who have left. They destroy their reputations and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's a range of, you know, cult-like mentality, the spectrum of that in these communities. And when it gets really cult-like, people are threatened if they want to leave. So it's a tricky and complicated question that you ask. And a lot of the reasons are unconscious in the shadow.
I can understand that. A question I got asked you, in the process of writing these last two books, what have you learned about yourself in the process of writing these books?
Well, the first thing I learned before I started The Inner Work of Age, I was sitting in a restaurant here in Santa Monica, my favorite organic restaurant, and a woman came in and sat next to me. She was very old and she was very dirty. It looked like she was probably homeless. She had dirty hands and raggedy clothes, and I felt sorry for her. And I watched her order free samples of food. She couldn't buy food. But I also tuned in to my inner dialogue, which is part of what we do with shadow work. We learn how to watch what we're saying to ourselves and what we're feeling and how our body's reacting in the moment. And I noticed that I was saying to myself, you know, she's old, she's dirty, she's needy, she shouldn't be here at my restaurant. And I'm feeling kind of repelled and I want to run. And then I took a breath and I went, oh, okay, this is a shadow character in me reacting to her in this way. Mm-hmm. And it's about ageism, because I was judging her for being old and alone and needy and poor. And I called that my inner ageist. And I discovered that even though in all the 60s and 70s, all the activism that I did around isms, you know,
right,
racism,
yes,
and sexism and homophobia, here I had a part of me that had internalized ageism. And that led me on the whole journey, yep, of the book. And it was humbling. It was surprising. And I later found a study by a large insurance company that surveyed thousands of women and discovered that the high majority of women in the U.S. all fear becoming poor and homeless.
Wow.
And so they've internalized the inner ageist and they live with that part of them. And that shadow character sends us messages about ourselves as we age, that we don't look good, that we're not fast enough, that we're not remembering enough, that we're getting wrinkled, and so I began to discover in my clinical work that older women were losing their self-acceptance and really moving into, for some people, feeling self-loathing, self-hatred, mm-hmm, because of their naturally aging bodies. So that experience is what led me to write the book, because I recognized that that was epidemic. And in men too, you know, in men, the inner ageist is more a fear of dependency, the fear of losing the provider role and being worthwhile and being useful.
Absolutely. Now, meeting the shadow on the spiritual path, the dance of darkness and light in our search for awakening, where are all your books available at?
So they're in bookstores, they're
okay.
on Amazon, they're on BarnesandNoble.com or BooksAMillion.com. For people who might be interested in book study groups, if you would like to read The Inner Work of Age in community, I have online free leaderless groups, and they've been going on for several years now. They're all over the world. People are reading together, and the book is full of practices. So they're doing the practices together, and they're building intimate friendships that way,
mm-hmm.
and aging in community. So if that is of interest, you can email me, ConnieZweig@gmail.com. Please put Wisdom Circle in the subject line. Please give me your time zone. Please don't send me a long message.
We'll include that down in the show notes, too. That way,
Wisdom Circle and your time zone. If you're aiding the shadow on the spiritual path with other people, you can put spiritual shadow work in the subject line and send me your time. These groups are free. They're leaderless. They're online. And they're thriving all over the world.
Very good. Very good. So make sure you look at your local bookstores and such. Do you have a website also, Connie?
Yeah. If you're interested in my videos and other interview recordings and workshops, you can go to ConnieZweig.com. Z-W-E-I-G. ConnieZweig.com.
Very good. Connie, it's been a delight having you on the show. We wish you very, very well with any future books you might have and, of course, the success with this current book. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and kind of delving into an area that we haven't talked yet on the podcast.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Hi, this is Rick Anthony. Thanking you again for listening to this episode of Someone You Should Know. Now, if you're an aspiring musician or an established musician that's looking for a little exposure, I invite you to drop us a line at someoneyoushouldknowpodcast@gmail.com. That's someoneyoushouldknowpodcast@gmail.com. Also, I invite you to tell a friend about the Someone You Should Know podcast. I thank you for tuning in this time, and I invite you to check us out next time on the Someone You Should Know podcast, because you never know who's going to show up. Until next time, remember, God loves you, and so do I.